You're listening to the home of cool, irreverent, and entertaining talk right here on LA Talk Radio. You just found the very best in original talk radio broadcasting on the internet. It's LA Talk Radio. We say what we want. You're listening to On the Couch, with Dr. Michelle on LA Talk Radio.
And you are on the couch with Dr. Michelle. As you are every Friday, Pacific Standard Time here on the nation's leading internet talk radio station, LA Talk Radio. Welcome, everyone. And as always, you're going to learn a lot today. I always try to help you out with many inspirational authors, tips for getting your relationships together, leading a better life, just being a little happier in general. Which, of course, is all about how we feel about ourselves and what we're willing to do in our lives. That's what it's about, of course. And if you'd like to call in the show today, I encourage you to do so. As always, the number here is 323-203-0815, 323-203-0815. And, of course, you can email me immediately on the air with questions. If you would like to, it's docmichelle@aol.com. That's linked right here to the LA Talk Radio webpage. docmichelle@LA Talk Radio. Doc Michelle. All right, there you go. Let me ask you something. On a scale of 1 to 10, how would you rate your life, folks? How about a 6? Can I hear a 7? Give me a 7. Well, that's pretty good. But what if you were told that living a 10 was possible? Would you go for it? Do you feel like you're worthy? A lot of people I work with don't feel worthy, but they complain a lot and don't understand why they can't live their lives like a 10. Would you risk doing things differently and looking at life differently in order to achieve a 10 in your life? Think about that. And you're going to figure out how you can do that, because my guest today is Pastor Terry Smith. And we're talking about his new book. It's 10, Would You Rate Your Life? How would you rate your life, folks? Terry, by the way, has served as a lead pastor of the Life Christian Church for 20 years. It's a non-denominational faith community in West Orange, New Jersey, and, of course, serving the New York City metro area. And, Terry, welcome to the show. So nice to have you with me today.
Thank you very much, Dr. Michelle. It's great to be with you.
Hey, Terry, I really enjoyed reading your book. Good stuff. Really good stuff.
I appreciate you reading my book. I appreciate your kind words. I appreciate being able to talk about how to get better at life with your listeners.
Well, hopefully you're going to do that today. You're going to inspire a lot of people, and they're going to start thinking about what scale their lives are rated on. I have a lot of people who come to see me who say, I'm a 4. And I go, oh, no, that's not acceptable. No, they need to read your book so they can become a 10 in their lives. And it's all subjective, too.
It is pretty subjective, but you're preaching to the choir here.
There you go.
You know, part of how, where the book came from is meeting with a lot of people who saw their lives as less than rather than more than, and we need to see lives through the lens of possibility.
Mm-hmm. That's great. So, Terry, what's the main theme? Just to kind of give an idea for listeners, and how do you hope readers' lives are changed with your book, 10?
Well, in 10, I asked the question, on a fulfillment scale of 1 to 10, how would you rate your life? And that word fulfillment is huge. You know, the cover of the book didn't have room for fulfillment, but you can't miss that, because that's the real concept. Right. On a fulfillment scale of 1 to 10, how would you rate your life? I'm not talking about primarily a happiness scale, because happiness will follow fulfillment anyway,
yeah.
or a money and stuff scale, or a nice little life scale. I'm talking about a fulfillment scale, that sense that a person has deep inside of who they are, that they're living the life they were meant to live, and it's good.
Mm-hmm. It's not a bad thing. Because, you know, we talked earlier, not being satisfied with what we have is often seen as the root cause of a lot of people's issues today, right? But in your book 10, you write that you think the problem is that we don't want enough. So that's a cool spin on that. Can you elaborate a little bit on what you mean by that?
Yeah, it's wanting enough of the right thing.
Mm-hmm.
I think people may want too much of the wrong stuff, but I'm trying to challenge people to want enough of the right stuff.
Mm.
So a lot of this concept came from a tremendous promise of Jesus. You know, I'm a spiritual guy.
Yeah.
And Jesus, in John chapter 10, verse 10, that works out real well, promised life in all its fullness. Or, as a paraphrase called The Message says it, more and better life than we ever dreamed of.
Hmm.
And I asked the question, how in the world can we have more and better life than we ever dreamed of? And why would Jesus have promised that if we aren't supposed to want it? And to me, the answer to the question, how can we have more and better life than we ever dreamed of, is by living the life that God dreamed for us.
Hmm.
So I would say, regardless one's faith perspective, as long as they believe that there's some purpose or meaning to their life, some intention, some plan, that the key to fulfillment is to figure out why we were here, what God had in his mind when he made people and made us, and then try to live that.
Yes, exactly. You know, I was talking to a client last night. She's had a lot of sorrows in her life. She was questioning, why is God doing this to me? And, you know, I suggested that there's a lot of life experiences that we all need to go through, and not necessarily to question it, but to allow it and observe it and love and just kind of move on and plan. And thanks to your book, by the way, which I read, it really helped me sort of align some suggestions for her. And I'd like to talk about those as well. I was sort of moving out my regular therapy because this poor person has been in a lot of sorrow and really needs something to grasp onto. So, and she's, you know, not a religious person per se, but she is spiritual and open to that idea that you just, you know, talked about. So it's really
frankly, I'd love to hear what you suggested to her. But
well, I'll tell you what I did. I suggested that she has to wake up and sort of realize that she, as a person on this plane, was created to live her life to the fullest. This is my belief system. It always has been. You know, God didn't put us here to say, okay, find your way, you're an animal, and that's it. You know?
You're firing me up, Michelle.
Good.
I love the way you took the first step of 10, which is awaken.
Mm.
And applied it in that situation.
Thank you.
Because regardless what we've experienced in our lives, we all need to wake up.
Yes.
And I do believe there's a spiritual component to that.
Yes.
And see that God created us to create our future, that we are not hapless victims. We can choose how to respond to the things that's happened to us, and we can choose to create new realities, and our lives are full of possibility and potential. But people need to wake up and see it.
Right. I agree. And as you point out, it's taking responsibility for your choices. And it is normal to react in certain ways to certain things, but continue to realize that you have the gifts within you to go for it. And what I'd like to do, Terry, is I'd like to talk about the steps, the necessary steps that you suggest to see the dreams that the higher powers put into all of our hearts. You know, I'm a spiritual psychologist, so I will be talking about this. And also people, you know, Pastor Terry makes references not only to the Bible and what Jesus has said, but you know, you also discuss psychologists and philosophers and
Absolutely.
Other individuals. So you're getting a taste of a lot of wonderful, brilliant souls who've been on this plane and who are still on this plane who actually are on the same page about many things. So
all truth is God's truth.
Right. Right. There you go. And so everyone else's truth is God's truth, I guess. That's what you would say. You've talked about... I'm sorry, Terry. Go ahead.
No, as you say, I've learned from a lot of people. My worldview is most shaped by, you know, biblical Christianity, but I have learned from so many people, from so many disciplines, so many experiences, so many religious and irreligious backgrounds, that and all of that has helped to shape my understanding of life and how to get better at it.
Yeah, wonderful. That is wonderful. By the way, folks, if you just tuned in here to LA Talk Radio, you're on the couch with Dr. Michelle and my special guest today, Pastor Terry Smith. We're talking about his new book, 10. How would you rate your life, folks? How would you get the most fulfillment? That's the key word here, out of your life, to have a 10 or what you would consider to be a 10. So, Terry, we talked about awakening. This is the first of the seven steps. You know, how can you help people accept the things they can't change? How do we awaken to God's dreams for us? And how can we sort of accept that, you know, the things I can and cannot change? How do we do that?
Well, the first step, I'm assuming you want to talk about the steps?
Let's talk about that. I'd love to do that.
So the book was written in seven parts, and each of the seven parts offers an insight and reflections and truths and steps that people can take to move towards this 10 life. So the first is awaken, where we wake up to the preferred future that's within us and that we were wired to be able to create. Mm-hmm. The second step is discover. And that's where I really encourage people to work through a process to figure out what their specific life was supposed to be about. I know a lot of people, if they knew what their life was supposed to be about, they'd probably be doing that with all their heart.
Mm-hmm.
And in
mm-hmm.
that, I discuss a concept called finding your area of destiny.
Mm-hmm.
And this, if I can just digress for a moment,
sure,
and name drop for just a moment,
uh-huh,
this is getting a lot of attention, this concept of the area of destiny. For instance, just this week, Susie Welch, the wife of Jack Welch, the former CEO of GE, of course, and so on.
Right.
And Susie, the former editor of the Harvard Business Review and a very spiritual person.
Right.
She tweeted that her favorite new career idea was my concept of finding your area of destiny. It was pretty cool to see that.
Pretty cool.
Come over Twitter.
Yeah.
For Susie to say that.
Yes.
This is a big idea about what it means to find that sweet spot in life, the intersect between the things you love to do and the things you're gifted to do,
mm-hmm,
so that the energy of your life can be focused on what brings you fulfillment. So the first step is awaken. The second is discover. The third is imagine, where I try to teach people how to practice the discipline of imagination to make the future that's in them real. The fourth step is grow, and this is where I discuss how that all of us have to grow to develop the character, the life infrastructure necessary to handle the success that we've been planned for. The fifth step is act, and that's where I talk about, and perhaps this is something we might want to dig into because you've already referred to it.
Right.
Changing our mindset from the mindset of a victim to an actor. The sixth step is lead, where I spend a lot of time trying to talk about how we have to learn the skills of leadership so we can lead ourselves and others to their best possible future. And the seventh step is a motivational step called go. That's where I inspire people to accept the call to get started living the more and better life that we were intended to live.
Yes. Well, those are great steps. Those are so motivating. And, you know, I found them very helpful in just sort of considering and thinking personally. And I know a lot of readers will, too. Let's get a little deeper into each one of these steps, because this will really inspire people, I think. How what are some of the tools we can use to wake up to God's dreams for our lives? I mean, how can we open ourselves up to discover that? There's so many people out there that say, I don't know what I need to do. I don't know what's right for me. You know?
First of all, I think a lot of people have such a wrong image of God or whatever, and however they relate to the idea of a higher power who made us and purposed us with intention. Mm-hmm. And there's this idea that he's probably a little bit ticked off, and many people live with this nagging sense of unworthiness, as you said earlier.
Yeah.
And that's tragic.
Yeah.
Because a real understanding of God, as I understand God, as taught about in Scripture, and particularly by Jesus, is a God who made us for greatness, who's cheering us on to our destiny, who wants to participate in our lives so that we can live fully what he intended for us. But as long as we have this feeling that perhaps it's hopeless and there's not anything we can do about our lives and God perhaps is working against us instead of for us, it keeps us from living to our fullest potential. So we have to wake up to what we were made to be. We have to wake up to the idea, and this is a powerful concept, of what it means to be created in the image of God.
Yes.
And what it means to reflect God's image in our lives. Being created in God's image, from my perspective, means that we have tremendous dignity. Every human being has tremendous dignity. We have tremendous responsibility. We weren't just made here to do our own things. We weren't just put here to do our own thing.
Mm-hmm.
We were purposed to participate with God in creating the world he intended. And then third, we have tremendous capacity.
Mm.
If we only understood how much capacity God wired into human beings to actually create our future, well, it's something to wake up to.
Yes, it sure is. When you talk about we were created to transcend, is that what you're talking about?
Yeah. Theologians say, when theologians define God, which is impossible to do, but it's a human attempt to define something indefinable.
Right.
They talk about God being transcendent and immanent as part of that definition. Transcendence, again, from my faith perspective, if you could imagine everything that exists having a circle drawn around it, and then could imagine God being outside of that circle, or the creator being outside of that circle, and having the capacity to make decisions about what's in the circle, enter the circle, impact the circle, that's a picture, really, of God's transcendence. But part of being created in God's image is that we have transcendence.
Uh-huh.
And we have the ability, in a limited way, as human beings, nonetheless, in a powerful way, to draw a circle around things and transcend them, things in our own lives, things in the world around us. Mm-hmm. We have the ability to draw a circle, for instance, around areas of need and say, I can make decisions about what's in that circle. I can enter that circle. I can bring change to that circle.
Yeah.
And then you might want to talk a little bit further about the idea of reactive transcendence and proactive transcendence,
right.
But I don't want to dominate all the time.
No, I love to hear it because you do distinguish between the two. If you could just do that for the listeners, that would be terrific.
Well, part of the Serenity Prayer, which is a marvelous prayer that my 12-step brothers and sisters pray,
is
to be able to accept, to have the wisdom to accept the things that we can't change.
Yep.
And then to change the things we can and to have the wisdom to know the difference.
Right.
I find that most people, especially people of faith, who have, in my opinion, confused ideas about God and how he wired us,
right,
they spend more time trying to accept the things that can't be changed.
Right.
And and that's an important thing. There are things that we cannot change.
Right.
And to those things, we need to practice reactive transcendence.
Mm-hmm.
We need to learn how to rise above that in spite of the fact we can't do anything about it. I, for instance, have a terrible case of male pattern baldness.
Oh, you're so... You look terrific, by the way. You're rocking that whole shaven head thing. You look great.
Well, I'm transcending male pattern baldness.
Yeah.
There's nothing I can do about it, so I just shave it. and try to look as good as I can.
You do. You look great with it.
Just have to accept it, transcendent by the fact I accept it. But there are a lot of things I can change.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, there are more things in ourselves and the world around us that we can change than most of us are aware of.
Yes.
Things we can draw a circle around and say, I can change that.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we need to spend as much time saying, this is what we can change, as we spend time saying, well, I guess that's just the way it is. A lot of people are folks who have life happening to them.
Right.
Where they need to be happening to life.
Oh, that's it. That is so true. Taking the action, you know. Accepting what can't be changed and then changing what can be possibly in our lives. You know, the Zen folks, they always say about the things we can't change, allow. That's one of my favorite words is allow, allow, allow. And be aware of what we can change. You know, it's very strong.
The problem sometimes with some worldviews is that they become fatalistic.
Mm.
And I have a problem with that.
Do you?
And I do. I think that we need to make a difference between accepting things as they are.
Yes.
And then seeing that there are other things, which is more of a faith worldview, seeing that there are other things that we do not have to accept. We must, something I say in 10 is that we must not accept things to which we should take exception.
Ah.
So I'm not interested just in learning the skill, let's say, of meditation to escape reality. I think that meditation is incredibly important, and I think understanding that life is difficult, and that, as Buddha said, as soon as we understand that life is difficult, it's no longer difficult, I think that's tremendous truth. But it's not all the truth. The other truth is that life is difficult, but in many ways we can draw a circle around things that are difficult, and we can change it. We can make a difference. We can create a new reality. We don't have to accept it or escape it or transcend it in that way.
Mm-hmm.
We can transcend it by entering it and making a difference.
I agree. And we were given the power as human beings to think and act and make those changes and fulfill the desires that we have. I think, like you said, our minds, the brains we were given, are brilliant. And if we open those minds up to do what we need to do, we can certainly do that. We need to discover our life's calling. That seems difficult to a lot of people, but you say you require some thought and work, and you do suggest some wonderful things at the end of your chapter on discovering. What are some of those ways we can discover our life's calling?
I think a spiritual awakening is hugely important.
Right.
I talk about, from a passage in the New Testament, how that we can travel in God's mind, how that we can know what was in God's mind for us, what our destiny is, and how those things are so wonderful.
Right.
1 Corinthians chapter 2 talks about this.
Mm-hmm.
Those things are so wonderful that human eyes can't see them, human ears can't hear them, the human mind can't conceive them, but we can know them in our spirit.
Yes.
Now that's spirituality.
Mm.
The idea that we can know things in our spirit that can't be known.
Right.
In the realm of flesh, if you please,
mm-hmm.
or the realm of the material. And so one of the things I do is I encourage people to believe that they can know what their life is supposed to be about.
Right.
That they can, through spiritual searching, discover what their life's supposed to be about. But I also, in the book, and then in some of my talks around this, which I have a series of talks on all of these things on living10.com that people find interesting.
Great.
I dig into some of these concepts a little bit more.
Mm-hmm.
But one of the things I talk about, just as an example, one thing is, I talk about how that we need to find God's purpose for us, or what we were meant for, in the good and beautiful things we love.
Mm-hmm.
And when I say good, I'm referring to moral.
Yes.
And when I say beautiful, well, I'm referring to beautiful. I again, for some reason, a lot of people seem to think that their they must have been meant to do something that they didn't love.
Yes.
Because so much of their life is drudgery.
Mm-hmm.
And they've come to accept that. We need to believe that God finds pleasure in the things in the good things that we find pleasure in. Here's an example. I have a friend who has a beautiful 6-year-old boy who is autistic.
Yes.
This boy is brilliant in many ways.
Yes.
And simple in others. And one thing that this little boy is fascinated with are electrical towers.
Huh.
Talking about the electrical towers along the side of the road.
Right.
And whenever this little boy sees an electrical tower, he obsesses over it to the extent that his dad has gotten to where he drives him by electrical towers at every chance he gets, because it brings a little boy such joy.
Yes.
Doesn't make any sense.
Right.
But he drives him by electrical towers, and when they get home, they get on the floor and they make electrical towers out of Legos and so on.
Wonderful.
Why? Because this father loves to see his son love something.
Yes.
He finds pleasure in what his son finds pleasure in.
Mm-hmm.
I wish that we could believe that God finds pleasure in the things that bring us joy.
Mm-hmm.
And look at that as a hint as to what our lives were to be about. There are many things that we love, that we find beautiful, that we find wonderful. And they're different things sometimes than other people
sure.
love
yeah.
and find beautiful things. And the reason that we love those things is because we were wired to, we were meant to, mm-hmm. we were intended to, we were purposed to. And in that, we'll find a hint as to what our life's supposed to be about.
Mm-hmm.
And we can make decisions about relationships, about careers, about goal setting, based on the good and beautiful things that we love.
Right. And I agree with you so much. That's really a wonderful thing to share with the listeners. So often, and I'm sure you've heard it as well as being a pastor, but also in my practice, so many times we hear people say, but I have to go to work every day. I hate my job. I hate what I do. I'm not happy. I'm tired all the time. I get up and you say, try to find what makes you happy. Maybe you can, even as a hobby, a side thing, start to explore what brings you joy. But I couldn't make a living at that. But I couldn't do that. Well, taste a little bit of the joy and find some joy in something else you're doing then, if you have to support yourself. Indeed, that's part of the plan, is taking care of yourself. But maybe you can slowly segue into finding joy and utilizing that as a way that you can help others, find something beautiful in it, and make a living as well. So,
absolutely. I think one thing is that many people can figure out how to find purpose in their work,
right?
Even if their work is not necessarily something that they enjoy, they mm-hmm. they still find a higher purpose. We may have to seek to discover it, but most of the time we can. I've helped business owners rewrite their mission statements
right.
to express higher purpose, that though the business was still doing the same basic work, they found purpose in it, in the way they treated their employees, in the way that they used their profits, in
right.
the way that they served their customers.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
But I also think a lot of times that we say that we're stuck in some job or career,
right.
that really, if we were willing to take action, we could change.
Yes.
Doesn't mean it isn't. That it's easy.
No.
Doesn't mean that it's quick. Doesn't mean that it doesn't involve sacrifice and risk. But most of us, really, if we were willing to take kind of a long view, we could change
mm-hmm.
those kinds of circumstances in our lives. And most of us don't have the courage
yeah.
to say, you know what, I feel stuck. I'm not going to be stuck here the rest of my life. I'm going to start working out a life plan.
Right.
Where 2 or 3 years down the road, I've gone back to school
mm-hmm.
and gotten involved in what I love, or I've left this job and started my own thing, or whatever. But
right.
the fact is, people say they're stuck, and really they're stuck because they've decided to be stuck.
Right. It's true. It's very true. They have decided, and it does take courage to do that. It's difficult a lot of times. By the way, if you just tuned in here to LA Talk Radio, you are on the couch with Dr. Michelle and my special guest today, Pastor Terry Smith. And we're talking about his new book, 10 How Would You Rate Your Life? It's a terrific read. It helps you get up and get going, and not necessarily have to be of a Christian faith, excuse me, although Terry does refer to many passages from the Bible and, of course, passages about what Jesus had to say. But also, you know, it's just believing in a higher power to acknowledge that you were meant to have a better life, to open yourself up to access things that will make you feel more fulfilled in your life. And we're talking to Terry about he has necessary steps to really create a 10 life. We've talked about awakening and discovering. And the next step, Terry, is imagining. So you talk about the discipline of imagination. We were just talking about having discipline and courage. But you also talk about psychologist Abraham Maslow, which I love the guy. I mean, he was amazing. And his theory of self-actualization. It's sort of the being in our highest state of a human, right?
Mm-hmm.
How do you relate that to becoming God-actualized?
Self-actualization has to do with actually living out your potential and living out at the highest level. When I talk about God actualization, and frankly, I had to go back in my mind, you're finding really interesting passages from my book and reminding me of brilliant things I said.
Good for you. Good, I'm glad.
I'm kidding. My next book's on humility. God actualization means to live out this concept of what God dreamed for you.
Mm-hmm.
And so when we connect our imaginings, what we imagine our life can be, mm-hmm. with this idea of what we believe God imagined our life can be, I believe that God has better life for us than we even dreamed of.
Mm.
So to be self-actualized is incredible, and Maslow's work around that is incredible.
Mm-hmm.
But I think there's actually a higher state than self-actualization. It's God-actualization. Mm. It's fully living out the potential that God purposed us with.
Wow. And we can do that, and we are capable of doing that. And in your book 10, you try to help people find that and get to that place. So the next step you suggest here, number 4, is to grow. And that makes a lot of sense, but it's a little more difficult than it sounds. Terry, how do you suggest that we try to develop our life, the infrastructure, which is necessary to you know, keep that success going, to sustain our successes?
This step isn't as much fun as the other ones. And really, it's not a step as much as I think this really speaks of a lifestyle.
Right.
We have to grow up.
Mm.
We cannot expect to build something significant on a life foundation that is weak and frail.
Mm-hmm.
And I challenge people to really embrace the processes that cause us to grow in our life. You talked a few moments ago about someone that you have been working with who's experienced a lot of sorrow. The reality is all of us experience sorrow. Clearly, some more and even much more than others.
Right.
But those kinds of things, if we're willing ultimately, and I don't mean to be simplistic, but if we're willing ultimately to embrace the depth and that sometimes even pain can bring us, that can be a tremendous part of our growth instead of that just becoming something bad that happened. If it can become a building block in our life, something that teaches us.
Mm-hmm.
I just think having a mindset in life of growth is important.
Yes.
I do suggest several steps in the grow piece that include knowing ourselves.
Yes.
I think it's just incredibly important. I think it was Socrates who said that he said, "Know thyself."
Right.
Trying to overstate how important it is to know ourselves is hard.
Yes.
What does it mean to become an expert on ourselves?
What does it mean?
We have to understand, first of all, this whole idea of our area of destiny, what we were meant to do, And then we have to learn emotional intelligence to understand the things that we're feeling, to understand the things that we want, to understand the things that we need.
Mm.
And a lot of folks live life skimming along the surface and are unwilling to do the kind of work that people do when they come to see you, Dr. Michelle.
Yes.
Yeah. To really dig deep to understand, why is it that I'm feeling this?
Mm-hmm.
Why am I angry?
Mm-hmm.
Why do I have such passion for X, Y, or Z?
Mm-hmm.
I think knowing ourselves isn't just knowing ourselves and our weakness, but it's knowing ourselves and our strength. It's knowing ourselves and our potential and our capacity and in terms of our hopes, our aspirations, our dreams.
Sure.
I talk in the Grow piece about knowing ourselves. I talk about developing, having a lifestyle of learning from, again, a variety of disciplines, including our life experiences. But also, most adults quit intentionally learning when they graduate from whatever the highest level of college is that they left.
Right. They do, don't they?
Yeah. The average person, I think, reads a book a year.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Yeah. Yeah.
And, you know, we sit around and our minds become marshmallows watching television. And I certainly watch television and enjoy a lot of it.
Sure.
But we have to intentionalize learning. We have to make learning a lifestyle. And one thing that causes people to get stuck in their lives and to get stuck in their careers is that, especially in today's world, we have to constantly be growing to keep up.
Right.
And especially growing to get ahead.
Right.
And growing to be leaders and growing even, you know, even parents have to grow to if we can hope to stay even at pace with our kids. So I'm simply saying that we have to be growing people. Learning is a big part of that. We have to be intentional about learning.
Yes, we do. Absolutely. That makes so much sense when you think about it, but not as easy, you know, not as easy as said. Absolutely. And growing is probably, like you said, the most difficult step. You also talk about the next step, act. Come on, let's act. Let's get to it. How do you suggest that we take the action to create our future?
First of all, we can't see ourselves as victims.
Right.
Life doesn't just happen to us. We happen to life.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that can sound kind of sappy and self-helpy, but the reality is, when you really get right down to it, most of the people that you counsel, I imagine, and this is certainly true of the pastoral counseling I've done over the years, they see themselves as victims.
Right.
Sometimes we are victimized, obviously. There are things that happen to us that we don't deserve, that shouldn't have happened.
Sure.
But we can decide what to do in response to that. We can make that decision.
Yes.
And so, whether it has to do with things that have happened to us or things that need to happen in our lives, we have to see ourselves as the actor. We have to be the person who says, I'm going to take whatever action is necessary to be a difference maker in this situation.
Mm-hmm. Right. And, you know, so many times people get stuck in the past. And like you said, they keep seeing themselves as the victim because they always keep referring back to, and I'm more of a therapist in the here and now action. Let's talk about what happened, why you think like you do out of survival now. But let's talk about and feel the way you do, whatever it may be, work through that. Let's now take the steps to move on. You're now going to take action. Or as you say in your book, you're going to become the actor that starts making changes and not weighted down by that old, you know, heavy thing on your ankle of they treated me badly. Mom made me feel less than. Dad was an alcoholic. Siblings beat up on me. Let's move on. Let's be who you need to be right now, the best.
Yeah, in the Grow piece, I think it's important to know ourselves, and part of it is our history and being honest about the things that happened to us that, that brought us to where we are. But the next piece is, okay, we can't stay there.
Mm-hmm.
Now what do we do?
Right. Let's do it. And the next step you suggest is to lead. Now, a large portion of your book is dedicated to developing leadership skills. And why is this so important to becoming a leader, as you suggest?
This is a big part of this whole 10 concept.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this book is categorized as a self-help book, and I didn't even know Amazon had a list like this, but it went all the way to like number 4 last week on the spiritual self-help list. So that's cool.
Good for you.
But the reality is, it's not first and foremost a self-help book, or perhaps I should redefine the self-help category.
Mm-hmm.
I say that it's impossible to completely help ourselves unless we're fully invested in helping others.
Mm.
So to me, leadership is essential for me to become a fully self-actualized or God-actualized human being. Mm. I have to learn to lead myself first.
Yes.
But then, if I have the capacity to create a better future, which I believe I do,
yes,
then I believe I have a moral obligation to help others create a better future for themselves and for our world as well. And that requires some modicum of leadership.
Yes. And you're not talking about, as you said, a narcissistic point of view. As you said, your next book's going to be on humility, and that'll be a beauty to read. I love that. But, embracing the concepts of humility that you have learned to take care and lead yourself, and you do have the capacity to create a more fulfilled future within yourself, you have a moral obligation, and that's where the spiritual part comes in. You teach others and help others to make their lives better, right? That's where you're coming from.
Yeah, and I actually don't think that I can fully help myself if my life is primarily about myself.
Right.
So
right.
Just the idea that I can self-help without caring about other people, without being invested in their lives, without being invested in the future, without caring about what's going on in the world around me. I think it's a misnomer.
Yes.
I must be leading others. And by leading, I'm not talking about a position. I'm talking more about the skills involved in inspiring other people and influencing other people and empowering other people to their self-actualization. I have to be doing that in order for me to reach my highest potential in life.
I hear you. And I'm sure you will empower a lot of people with your book. By the way, folks, if you just tuned in, my guest today is Pastor Terry Smith. And, we're talking about his latest book. It's called 10, How Would You Rate Your Life in Terms of Fulfillment? Not necessarily happiness, as we talked about. A 6, 7? Why not be a 10? And Terry talks about the steps you can take to achieve a 10 in fulfilling, what you would like to do in your life and being, a more peaceful, fulfilled individual. So leading is very important. And again, it's about, it is a moral obligation. We have to, once we learn about ourselves, we have to, really, it's all about other people, how we embrace them, how we love them for which they are, and try not to judge others based on our own, feelings that we've had and problems we've had, and having empathy. And that's all part of it as well,
It sure is. I would note that we have in our local church here, the Life Christian Church in West Orange, New Jersey, we have a very effective recovery program called PATH.
Great.
And something that I noticed from the people who participate in this group, and a lot of it's anonymous, but because I'm play a pastoral role, a lot of them talk to me about their experiences in recovery.
Right.
The 12 steppers are very quick to say that once you start into recovery, in order to sustain recovery, you must begin to help others recover.
Yes.
And it amazes me how many of the folks I know who are in successful recovery over a long period of time, how much time they spend sponsoring other people, how much time they spend going to meetings, not so much for themselves, but because of the impact they can have on other people.
Yes.
I find in that one model of many, and I talk about a number of applications for this in 10, I find this a model of the way we have to live our lives. It's not just when I become fulfilled, I then will start helping others.
Right.
It is as I am becoming fulfilled.
Right. Okay.
I will start helping others, because helping others is part of what brings me fulfillment.
Exactly. And of course, we can learn from others as well. We learn. and we share. And a lot of that is not judging as well. So
yeah,
the last step you suggest is to go. Let's go for it. How can we accept the call to get started living the life that God dreams for us, or the higher power who we worship, you know, dreams for us, wants for us? How can we do that?
The go part is really motivational. I'm trying to leave people at the end of this book with the reality, first of all,
yeah,
that living at 10 is a process.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not sure, frankly, we ever achieve it, because as soon as we achieve what we believe is a 10, God in His grace will cause us to wake up to more of His dreams for us.
Right.
And we'll keep moving towards that.
Mm-hmm.
And during this process, we'll experience that classic 3 steps forward, 2 steps back, but we're still a step ahead reality.
Mm-hmm.
I really try to encourage people to understand that moving towards the life that we have the potential to live is not a up and to the right, straight, linear process.
Mm-hmm.
Our human experience is messy. It's fraught with peril. We inevitably have enemies to our dreams. Mm-hmm. And I just try to motivate people just to get up and go every day and understand that if they keep moving towards God's vision for their lives, they will get there.
Right.
If they'll just go.
When you talk about enemies towards our dreams, what do you specifically mean?
Well, I personally believe that there are spiritual forces that oppose us. What I talk about mostly in 10 is the fact that there will be, for whatever reason, people who oppose us.
Sure.
Sometimes just because they're petty,
yeah,
and small-minded. And other times because they have an agenda that's different than ours is.
Right.
But if we'll just keep getting up every day and moving forward and not focus on our enemies,
right,
I think at some point our enemies just lose their energy.
Yes.
And I've experienced that many times in my life. You know, the way to deal with darkness is to turn the light on.
There you go.
The way to deal with opposition is to just keep moving forward.
That's exactly right. I totally agree with you. And for me as a psychologist, I a lot of times look at the negative forces or, you know, those out there. I mean, no one always likes us. Everyone is not always perfect and is always going to support us. There are other people who have struggles against us and see us as their enemies as well. And we have to be watchful of that. I choose to look at people like that as just basically fearful, saddened, not enlightened, and allow them to have their truth, but steer clear and just send them the light if I can and focus on what I need to do. So it's very similar as well.
Yes.
Yeah.
And just keep moving forward.
Exactly. Not focus on the enemies, not focus on the negativity. And
yeah, if we can get up every day and focus on doing what we know we were made to do.
Right.
And just focus on that with a laser like energy, it's amazing how many other things around us that typically concern us so much just are somehow worked out.
Oh, yeah. How can people get a hold of your book, Terry? It's a great read, folks. I really want you to think about logging onto the website here and getting a hold of this book, because it really will help you in your life. It's not only practical, it's spiritual, and it has so many inspirational you know, quotes in it from the Bible, from psychologists, from a lot of people who are just wise individuals in the world. So how can they get a hold of your book or get in touch with you, Terry?
It's available on all the major online retailers, Amazon, Barnes and Nobles, etc. It's available in bookstores everywhere. If it's not on the shelf, ask for it. The bookstores aren't carrying as many books as they used to. Mm-hmm. So ask for it and they can get it for you. Or our website is living10.com. One word, living10.com. And on our website, there also are resources for small groups, motivational talks by me.
Mm.
I also love it. I love for people to connect with me on Twitter.
Okay.
My Twitter address is Terry_A_Smith. and also Facebook, Pastor Terry A. Smith, one word. But all that can be found at living10.com.
Great.
I'd love to connect. I'd love to connect with your listeners. I try to respond to all the communications people send me, and I love encouraging people to their best futures.
Oh, Terry, that's lovely. Thank you so much for being a great guest and inspirational speaker on my show today. What a pleasure.
Thank you, Dr. Michelle. God bless you.
God bless you, too. Pastor Terry Smith again, his book, 10, How Would You Rate Your Life? Have a beauteous day. Thank you so much for being
here.
All right, Terry. Thanks. Thanks a million.
All right.
Bye-bye. Terry Smith again, the author of the book 10. How would you rate your life? Huh? How would you rate your life? Think about that. Read the book. Again, the show will be up and available for replay download tomorrow if you wish to hear again the inspirational words of Pastor Terry Smith. And, of course, you can have the connections on the webpage here to his website. Find out how to get the book. Have a wonderful day, everybody. Beautiful weekend. We're going to have a wonderful show, as always, next week, Friday. Some more inspiration for you. As I always do say, take care of yourself first, all right? And then you'll be great for other people, too. Have a good one. Take good care. Bye-bye now.